Welcome to Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. I'm Paula Slater, your host.
Okay, today I'd like to welcome Janice Blake, and Janice is a jockey. Welcome, Janice.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you for having me.
Janice, you've written a book called How to Exercise a Thoroughbred Racehorse. And what prompted you to write the book?
Well, my 12-year-old niece was visiting me in New York, and I started telling her a few things here and there about horses because she's horse crazy and she's taking lessons in Florida. So I just started telling her things about the racetrack and how things go and what to do. And then she went back home, and I started thinking that when she goes to college, a lot of things that college students do is they'll gallop horses in the morning and then they'll go to classes in the afternoon. And that way they always have some spending money in their pocket. Mm-hmm. So I started writing things down about what to look out for and how to do certain things and what this means and what that means and who these people are and just the basic things about the racetrack that normal people from the outside wouldn't necessarily know. Mm-hmm. And as I was going along listing things, I was thinking, you know what, this would be really good information for just about anybody, because there's a lot of information on the racetrack that is not written down anywhere. It's all still word of mouth. Like if the racetrack were to just disappear off the face of the earth, there's nothing written down about how to do things. So that's partly that's where a lot of my information comes from, is just writing this stuff down that nobody really knows. And giving people a wider a window into what actually goes on with the horses in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that's very interesting, of course, is that female jockeys haven't been around all that long. So can you tell me a little bit about the history behind that?
Yeah, years ago, like in the 50s and the early 60s, women were not even allowed on the racetrack. And what's funny is there's a building in Charlestown on the backside, and it's got about the man's side has about 3 stalls for bathrooms, and the women's side has about 8. And what happened was that used to be a bathroom for just all the men, and it had like 10 stalls in it, just for the men. And then when the women came on the backside, they had to make a wall in between 2 of the toilets so that there was half men and half women, because there were no facilities for women and there was nothing that would accommodate the female of the species. So it was very interesting that way. And there was a lot of prejudice and a lot of name calling and, you know, you should be in the kitchen, go home and fix me a meal, things like that. But, you know, thank God for the pioneers of the sport. And they actually went to the Racing Commission and demanded that they be given a license. And eventually they were. At first they were dismissed, and the women got a lawyer, and eventually they were allowed to have a license. And then when they were entered into a race, some of the jockeys refused to ride in a race against women. And they came up with these things like, oh, well, we don't want her to get hurt and, you know, all of this. And the bottom line is it's more of an ego thing where they didn't want to get beat by a girl. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, those guys, you know, way back when. But now, you know, fast forward to these days, it's no big deal. We're just one of the gang, and sometimes you're on a live horse and sometimes you're not, just like any other jockey. And if you win the race, then you just win the race. That's it. It's not like, oh, I got beat by a girl.
What's the ratio of men to women on a regular race day or an average race day?
I would just have to say it's maybe 2 or 3 women to about 15 to 16 men. Mm-hmm. So it's not a great amount. And the women don't usually don't get the prime mounts like the guys do. You know, just there have been a couple women in history that have done that, like Julie Crone and recently Rosina Pravnik has reached the upper limits. But I mean, that stands to reason because the number of women that go in are statistically only one or two are going to rise to the top, whereas, you know, a greater number of men come into the business, they're going to rise to the top. So it's statistically, I'm sure it's very similar.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did women actually get the right to ride on a track?
I believe it was 1969. And that's when a woman rode in the first sanctioned paramutual race. They were riding in other races around the country that were not sanctioned, that were not paramutual races, which means that the public could not bet on them. And then 1969, I believe, they started to be able to ride in larger venues and racetracks.
Mm-hmm. What about women grooms? Were they allowed on the track?
Well, eventually they were, just like any other licensed employee. But a lot of times they didn't get the jobs just because it was a lot of physical labor, and the trainers didn't believe that the women could actually do this kind of physical labor. I mean, women can have babies, but, you know, heaven forbid they should do physical labor. So eventually, I mean, even now there aren't that many women grooms, but there are here and there, and, mm-hmm. and they do the job just as well as the men do. It's a very tough job. It's 24/7 right. being a groom.
Now, what about, is there a difference between Europe and North America in terms of grooms? Were grooms present on the racetrack in Europe?
Well, I really don't. Can't really say anything because I don't know about that.
Oh, okay. Yep, that's fine. All right. So now getting back to the grooms in North America. So the physical work would be difficult and finding the time as well. But what's the state of grooms? Same thing?
Well, yeah, basically it's the same thing. It's not, there are several female grooms, but they're not prevalent. A lot of times the guys are the grooms and the wives will be the hot walkers. And then that way the hot walkers get off work about 11 o'clock. And then they don't really have to come back in the afternoon. Like the grooms have to come back and feed and that sort of thing. So the women will go home and they'll pick up the kids from school and they'll start getting dinner ready and stuff like that, you know, if the guys have a family. So that's kind of how it works out that way. But there are several grooms, female grooms here and there that do the regular job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now let's go back to your book and talk about you decided to write it for your niece to give information or also to share the information about horses and riding on the track mm-hmm. with the world.
Yeah.
So just talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's very mysterious what goes on in the morning training the horses. And I wanted to illuminate the activities because I imagine myself being an owner that didn't know anything about racehorses, but I wanted to get into it. And so I went to visit the track. I wasn't allowed on the backside, so I had to go on the front side and watch the horses on the track going back and forth. And, you know, why is this horse going in the opposite direction as that one? And this one is on the outside fence, and that one's on the inside fence. And this one's going slow, and that one's going fast. And then some of the horses stop over there, and some of them stop over there. And then this one, what's going on here? So I wrote it to demystify, you know, what the horses are doing and why they're doing it, and to also give a framework for riders who are just coming onto the racetrack and they haven't grown up with it, which is how I started. I came onto the racetrack when I was about 30, and that's very late. That's about 15 years too late. A lot of people on the track, they just grew up with it. Their parents are trainers or whatever. But I just kind of showed up and I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, a lot of people, they just, you know, they'll just walk right past you. They won't bother to explain anything. And, it's kind of like that on the whole racetrack is nobody wants to give anybody any information because you might get an edge somehow, right. Or you might be divulging some pertinent information to get somebody's horse claimed. you know, oh, what are you talking about my horse for? What are you watching my horse for? Or, you know, how come you're asking me about that bandage or, you know, whatever. And there's just a whole, there's a whole atmosphere of mistrust and cloak and dagger kind of mystery. So I wrote the book to you know, illuminate that this kind of behavior. And, you know, nobody's doing anything underhanded, or, you know, it's not torture for the horses to go out and gallop. Some horses love to train and some horses don't, you know, they're just like people. Some are natural athletes and some are not. And like athletes, any kind of athlete, there's going to be injuries. So it's up to the talent of the trainer or the groom to recognize when there's a problem with the horse and to nip it in the bud. And it's just like raising children. Sometimes you catch a problem early and you can fix it. And other times you don't really see anything wrong and the problem gets out of hand before you realize it. So it's a matter of having enough awareness and horsemanship to see into the future of how this horse is developing.
Mm-hmm. And usually one thinks that it's the owner that does all that.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how much experience they've had. And then, of course, they'd probably assign someone else who's had more background. An owner is somebody that claims horses or buys them and then lets the trainers go.
Right. The owner basically supplies the money and the horses, and he pays the bills every month. Mm-hmm. And the trainer then takes the whatever monies he gets from the owner, and he pays for the hay, the grain, the straw, the help, the exercise riders, the grooms, everything. The only thing extra mm-hmm. the owner pays for at that point is the vet work and the shoeing.
Right.
So that's a little bit extra, but basically the owner puts the horses with the trainer that he or she trusts, and then all the decisions are made from that point by the trainer, mm-hmm. Depending on what kind of relationship the owner has with the trainer. Sometimes the owner is very, very hands-on and carries a condition book mm-hmm. around and says, oh, I found a race for this horse, which tends to drive the trainers crazy because the owners don't really know what's going on with the horse. And then all of a sudden they have this race for the horse. It's like, oh, let's go to the Derby this year. And the trainer's like, oh, we don't really have a Derby horse. Oh, but I want to run in the Derby, you know, kind of. And then you have an argument with the owner about, you know, their eyes are, it's kind of like their eyes are bigger than their stomach. And, so you kind of have to bring the owner back to the ground.
Okay. So now the owner, again, I guess in I don't know very much about racing, obviously. And so what I've seen, you know, or learned is usually from movies or around different cities, there are people that own, you know, racehorses, thoroughbreds, mm-hmm. and they raise them on their property. And I guess just going by, I sort of assumed that they knew because they were on the property, you know, about breeding and raising racehorses.
Oh, you just assumed that they knew all that stuff?
I guess I did.
Yeah.
Naively, yeah.
Well, not
yeah,
really.
Yeah, because why would you be interested?
Yeah.
You know?
It's not, it's more, it's like people having children, you know. Some people just know more about children than other people. Some people have a knack for raising children. Some don't. Some think they do. It's kind of like walking through Walmart and you mm-hmm. see the mother or the father grab hold of the child and tell them to shut up and shake them. And it's just horrifying. The same thing goes with horses. You know, you see people do things on the track and it's like, oh, my God. But it's, again, it's like saying something about somebody's child. You know, it's like, well, who do you think you are? This is my child. You're not going to tell me how to raise my child. And that's how people mm-hmm. feel about their horses. So you have to be very careful about what you say to people about their horses, because then, especially myself as a jockey, you know, I'll tell somebody something about their horse. And, well, who do you think you are? You know, oh, you think you know everything. You're a trainer now. Oh, I thought you were a jockey. But no, now you're training. So you know, you have to, even though you do see, I see abuses and things that should not be, it's very difficult to communicate that and keep my professionalism intact.
Okay. So everyone has their defined role and they don't cross over.
Well, theoretically, yeah. Yeah. You just do your job and shut up and you don't comment on anything like that, or unless you have a particular relationship with the trainer. And then you can say, well, you know, can I tell you something about this horse? Or, you know, I felt something this morning, or, you know, or, oh, I watched the race and it looks like maybe the horse might need blinkers. You know, you don't want to say the horse needs blinkers. You kind of put it into a kind of a let them come up with the idea, like, oh, you know, this horse might need blinkers. You know, he kind of was a little bit looking at the other horses, and oh, well, let's try blinkers on him. Oh, that's a good idea. You know, you kind of put it in that. It's very, you have to be very diplomatic because there's a lot of egos running around, bouncing around.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's look at the role of the jockey. Mm-hmm. First of all, how is there's sort of a weight, I gather, there's a weight requirement and a height, or
no.
Is that still true?
No, there's no weight or height requirement per se. The only weight requirement is what the horse carries. So if the horse carries 116, then the jockey has to make 116. So whether or not they can do that is, you know, it's up to them. And if they can't.
Now, that's including the saddle.
Yeah, that's the saddle and your riding boots and your clothes, but not
everything.
Not your vest and not your helmet, because that's safety equipment.
Oh,
but everything else,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, how are the jockeys paid for a race?
Well, they're paid a percentage of the purse for first, second, and third place. And after third place, they're just paid, depending on the track, $100 per mile.
Ride.
Yeah.
Now, do you don't do any of the exercising?
Yeah, I do occasionally, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then the clothing that the jockeys wear, can you talk about that? What are the requirements? You mentioned the helmet and vest as safety equipment.
Yeah, and then there's usually some kind of a body shirt that goes on first, and then you put on the vest, and then you put your silks over that. So that's the upper part, and then the bottom part is like I use pantyhose underneath my silks. Some use like, you know, a pair of underwear, or some type of spandex bicycle pants kind of thing. And then then my jockey pants, which are very light and they have elastic on the bottom. And then your jockey boots, you know, some kind of socks. Okay. Or I don't wear socks because I just wear the pantyhose. And then.
Right.
The jockey boots, and that's about it. And you have your whip, but that's not included in the weight. Yeah.
And in terms of, I gather the owner determines what silks are worn by the jockey.
Yeah, the owner gets to design their own individual set of silks, so they get to choose the colors and the design and what kind of things are said or are written on the silks, or what picture is on it, or their initials or something like that. And then they have to register that with the jockey club.
And what about in terms of, you know, knowing who or which horse you're going to be riding? Do you get to, you mentioned you do some exercising a little bit before, but are there times when you've just on a horse you've never ridden before, or how does that
work? Sometimes you meet the horse the day you come out of the paddock. You meet the horse on that very day. Mm-hmm. And other times you have met the horse in the morning on the backside, and you work the horse, or you've galloped the horse, and you know, you just go from there.
Yeah, it's probably be better if you, the more you ride them, the better you know them and know what they're capable of doing or not
doing.
Well,
you know, sometimes, not really. It's kind of like meeting another person for the first time. You kind of size them up and, you know, you get your first impression, and then, you know, people are people, horses are horses. They're not that much different, but sometimes you can ask the trainer, you know, is there anything I should know about this horse? Or, you know, does he go okay with the pony? Is he loading the gate all right? Or, you know, does he like the inside or outside? Or, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. And what about you mentioned blinkers before. How does that
blinkers,
work in terms of knowing which?
Blinkers need give them? The horse focus. They cover the back part yep. of the eyeball, so the horse cannot. The horse's head is on the horse's eyes are on the side of their head, so they could see 180 degrees on either side. And then once they get to the front of their vision, they have like a blind spot because their eyes are on the side of their head. They're not in the front of their head. So anyway, the blinkers keep the horse's focus forward. They're not allowed to see behind them because they're covered up with the blinkers. And that just it makes the horse concentrate more on what's going on in front of them instead of behind them. Some horses are nervous or kind of neurotic, and they'll be worried about what the horses are doing behind them or what the horses are doing on the side of them. And if you close them up a little bit, don't let them see so much, then they just have their mind on going forward.
What's the average age of horses that you're riding?
Probably 3 or 4. Mm-hmm.
And how long do, what's the career span in terms of a years?
Some horses start racing at 2, some do not, most do not. 2-year-old is very advanced. That would be a very advanced type of individual that, you know, starts racing at 2. And it takes a lot of organization to actually get a horse to the races at 2.5, because it's, you know, they're in the middle of their 2-year-old year when they start racing in June or July. I mean, that really takes a lot of breeding the horse and then sending it to a farm where they're going to start riding the horse 8-10 months before that, and then teaching the horse, galloping the horse, getting the horse fit. And so these horses that you see in the Kentucky Derby, there's a lot of behind the scenes money and organization that's gone into that animal. It's not just like, oh, you pull them out of a field and, you know, gallop around a couple times and then you go to the races. They're very, very, very highly prized animals that are, every move they make is chartered. So anyway, most horses start racing when they're 3, some 4, depending on certain things that happen. Like sometimes they'll have a physical setback. Other times, I know this horse that was ready to race and the people got divorced and the woman took the foal papers and the trainer didn't have the foal papers for the horse and she wouldn't give them back, and you know, so the horse didn't get to run on time, and you know, that sort of thing. There's a lot of different reasons why horses start or not, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in terms of development, yeah, too, some of the growing still needs to happen.
Right, they're still growing, even though horses in the Kentucky Derby are still growing, and that's got to be taken into account, mm-hmm, because there's a gap in the knee where the horses are growing, and sometimes that can become problematic. And you just need to monitor everything, and if the horse isn't right, then it's obviously not going to run a good race. So when that starts happening, you have to back off, and the horse will tell you that it's not ready to do what you're asking it to do. So, but yeah, it's just like when you're in high school and some kids are athletic and some are not, you know, and some are just naturally gifted and some are not. And that's just the way horses are.
So that, and then I'm thinking too about the jockey. The horses are being trained, or not trained, but exercised, and they're practicing, mm-hmm, and working out, basically. So the jockey needs to work out as well. So what do you do to
I get on some horses in the mornings. I enjoy doing that, and it keeps me fit. I don't have to go to the gym as much if I get on horses in the morning, and mm-hmm, I really don't. I'd rather not go to the gym. So I like to get on horses in the morning, but for the jockeys that don't do that, they go to the gym and they work out and do cardio and weightlifting and things like that, and whatever they think that their body needs, you know, for that particular day. But if you're riding 4 or 5 horses a day, then you don't need to work out. That's plenty. You're plenty fit.
Right. Right. Okay. So what about different things that people do? Do you tape legs up And do they wear, you know, or can they? I mean, I know there's a number of rules surrounding what a horse can and cannot have in terms of tack and, you know, definitely in shows. I don't know about the racing industry, but say, you know, leg bandages and stuff like that, racing bandages.
On the horse?
I don't know.
Yeah, you can have bandages on the bottom, on the legs. They use ace bandages. They call them trace bandages, T-R-A-C-E. Those are the usually types. Sometimes they'll put rundown patches on them, which is like a plastic patch on the bottom of their fetlock, so that they don't get scraped up on the track. But
is that like a cup of some
it's
sort?
It's kind of just like a circle, a plastic little circle. Sometimes it has a shape to it, like a cone almost, so it fits on the back of the fetlock nicely, you know. And then they put the bandage over that. But as far as boots, the horses don't wear boots when they race because they're too heavy, and it would, you know, get in the way of the, you know, it would slow them down actually. So
right. And has the racing saddle changed at all over the years?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. It's just different materials. You know, it's just more new age materials. They're not made of leather anymore. They're made of like patent leather or neoprene or something like that, where it washes off very easily.
And
the bridles can be leather or the other nylon type that comes in different colors, like green and red, blue, black, whatever. Mostly the bits are racing D, a loose ring snaffle, a regular snaffle, like an egg butt snaffle, and a ring bit. I'm not too crazy about the ring bit. I think it all has to do with a person's hands. But the ring bit is actually used a lot on the racetrack, which I always try to get my horses out of the ring bit as soon as I can. Those are pretty much the type of bits. Once in a while, at the cheaper tracks, when the horses have more pronounced problems or more ingrained problems, you'll find run-out bits and cage bits and different types of bits to put on the horse's mouth to keep it going straight ahead.
Have you ever been on a horse that you couldn't stop?
Well, yeah, but I mean, eventually they stop. What you do if the horse is running off with you, you just put him down on the fence and act like you're working, act like you're breathing, and the horse will stop eventually. It's not gonna run off forever. The problem is when it's running off in the wrong direction, or it's running off on the outside fence, and you're running directly into traffic, you know, coming straight at you. That's the problem. But if the horse is running off in the middle of the racetrack, you just try to slow it down, or you go by the you go by the outrider and say, "Help me," you know, and they come and get you, you know. But yeah, I haven't really had like a runoff in the opposite direction ever. Usually if a horse starts getting, let's say they go past critical mass where you feel like you can't control the horse, you just turn his shoulder into the fence, into the outside fence, and then they'll stop. You run the horse into the outside fence. You know, not so it's going to flip over the outside fence, but you kind of use the racetrack fence to help you control the horse.
Now, when you're racing, do you have a preference in terms of the track material?
Not really. I mean, there's dirt and there's turf. I don't have a preference.
So, and you've always wanted to race, but just didn't act on it until...
Well, no, I mean, I started in before that, but that's pretty much the point that I got my jockey's license and started doing what I'm doing, you know. But, yeah, everybody told me that, you know, I told my mom when I was 15 I had to go to the racetrack and I had to start galloping horses and, you know, I'm going to be a jockey. And, you know, she said, "Oh, no, stay in school, la, 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 la." So I did that, and I went to college, and I got a degree in a BS in biology. I started working in Chicago as a lab tech, and, you know, one day I just said, you know, I better do this jockey thing before I wake up and say, I wish I would have, could have, should have. So I went to the racetrack, and I started galloping horses there, and just one thing led to another, and That was excellent.
Yeah. And then you've written this book, which will also help share the information with other people, especially young women who are interested in racing.
Yeah, I've had I've had a lot of women contact me through my website and say, oh, I'd like to be a jockey, on my Facebook page, and, oh, I see you've written a book and blah, blah, blah. And most of the time I'll send them like an e-copy or some articles off of my book that can be useful for them. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
That's excellent. And speaking of website, would you share your URL with listeners? Facebook as well, and any other social media.
Okay. It's very simple. My website is www.janiclblake.com. Don't forget the L, because there's another website out there with Janice Blake, and she doesn't want to give it up yet. So I had to put the L in there. And the L looks like it kind of combines with the B, so sometimes you don't see the L.
Okay.
JaniceLBlake.com. And on there you can see my book and a lot of different pictures of my career and things like that. So that's on there. And my Facebook page is, again, Janice L. Blake. I have two. I have a personal page and then I have a business page, so you can look those up. My Twitter is JLBJock, J-O-C-K. I'm also on LinkedIn, same thing, Janice L. Blake. And that's pretty much it.
That's super. All right. Now, Janice, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I do these. I do a jockey presentation. I'm a speaker.
Excellent. Tell us about it.
Okay. I take my jockey bag with all of my jockey equipment in it, just what I would take to the jock's room if I were to be riding a horse. And I take it to the presentation, and it's like a jockey show and tell. I put all my equipment out on the table, and I go through each piece, and I pick it up, and I show it, and I explain what it is and how it evolved and why we use it. And then I pass it around the room, and they get to feel how light or heavy it is. Most jockey equipment is very light. I bring my saddles. I bring my jockey whip, my helmet. Everything that the jockey would use. And as I'm discussing my equipment and passing it around the room, people are asking me questions. So I've had most of my jockey presentations are supposed to be 40 minutes to an hour, and they end up being 2.5 hours, and they have to close the room. They just say, you know, you have to wrap it up because we're getting ready to close. And it's like, okay, okay. So there is a lot of interest out there about racing and especially about the welfare of the horses and what happens to them after they race why do horses break down and what's going on with that and why is that so prevalent, and you know, people just want to know what's going on with the horses. There's a huge market for this kind of information.
Now, how can people book you for a talk? Would that be through your website or for Facebook as well?
Yeah, you can private message me on Facebook, or you can go on my website, and there's a tab of jockey presentations, and you can read about it and then send me an email. My email is janice@janicelblake.com, so it's very easy.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Okay. All right. Well, that's great. That's super. Well, thank you so much, Janice, for spending some time today and explaining some of the, well, it's got a huge world of racing. And like you say, there's a great interest in, like myself, I really don't know that much about it. And it is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, again,
I have a lot of questions.
Well, I think that's great that you're doing the public speaking. That's wonderful. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Janice. We'll say goodbye.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Now, just a short word from Whitehall Publishing to encourage all those authors out there.
When you're finally ready to publish that book you've been promising yourself you would write someday, contact Whitehall Publishing. We're here to help, and we can take your book from concept to completion. At Whitehall, you'll be treated like the successful author you were meant to be. Visit us online at www.whitehallpublishing.com or email us at info@whitehallpublishing.com to get started today. What are you waiting for?
I hope you enjoyed my interview today with Janice Blake, female jockey and author. For more information about Janice and her wonderful career, please visit Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. This is Paula Slater signing off for Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. See you next week. Bye.